Hey there, folks. It's your pal, Alex Schmidt, Schmitty the Clam, with an exciting announcement. The announcement is I made a one-off podcast mini-series. It's my own little thing. It's my own little passion project, and it's called One Way to Make an Emoji. You know, something you may not know about me is that I created an emoji that's going to be on your phone later this year, 2020. It is the bison emoji, you know, like the American buffalo, American bison. That's going to be on your phone. And I proposed that. A world governing body decided it's going to be part of the keyboard. And the podcast is about that and so much more stuff. So I can't wait for you to hear it. What you want to do is search for One Way to Make an Emoji. That's the number one in that title there. One Way to Make an Emoji in your podcast app, or you can follow the links to Apple and to Spotify in the footnotes of this podcast episode. It's a short mini-series, it's a fun mini-series, and it's all gonna release all at once, so if you subscribe now, you will get the entire show right when it's ready, and then you get to enjoy it. Also, watch for a column on Cracked by me. It's going to have stories and pictures and fun stuff that goes with the podcast. And again, that podcast is called One Way to Make an Emoji. Please open up your podcast app and subscribe to it. And thanks. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also going to share a fun piece of audio with you. However, it will not be audio of my cat Watson purring. It's really our cat, mine and my partner Brenda's cat. But anyway, you will not hear Watson this week, because here's the thing. Last week, he did purr, but I think he was not super into being held up to the microphone a bunch, you know, and I don't want to be too much of a stage parent and that kind of a thing. So no cat purring right now. If you want to hear either of the last two episodes for, you know, just some cat magic, you can get it there. Instead of that cat audio, I provide to you this week the following clip from the most recent baseball broadcast that I watched.
This one's crushed to left field. Jimenez at the wall. He leaps and Aloy can't make the catch. It's gone. Dylan Moore with a home run. And suddenly the Mariners have taken a 4-3 lead in a simulated game meant to bring heartwarming catharsis to White Sox Nation.
That was the voice of Jason Benetti, and he is my guest today. Mr. Benetti is the play-by-play announcer for the Chicago White Sox of Major League Baseball. They are a baseball team in Chicago. The other one's the Cubs, if you're wondering why it's not that one. Jason Benetti is also a longtime ESPN broadcaster. He's done football, basketball, he's done minor league baseball, and many other sports. And I'm excited to talk to him for so many reasons. We are both lifelong fans of the Chicago White Sox. We're both from the Chicagoland region. We're both alumni of Syracuse University, which is very cold. You need to know that going in. Also, we are both people who enjoy the enormous privilege of getting to work from home during this coronavirus pandemic. And it is clear to me that we are both people who really, really love having a baseball season every year. I just know it in myself because I'm inside my own head. Haha. But Jason Benetti and another one of his sportscasting colleagues, Chuck Garfine, have instituted what I believe is a first in the entire history of sports, just in all of the history of the entire world. The two of them are professional White Sox broadcasters, and they are doing full-on professional commentary live on YouTube each Thursday. And the thing that they are commentating on YouTube is a fully digital virtual simulated baseball game. There is a PlayStation 4 video game called MLB The Show, and they are doing actual professional announcing on it. Like, they update you on what happened in the other simulated games of the week. They have great insights on, like, injuries and pitching matchups. And as you'll hear from Jason, there's even some special prep and special on-the-fly stuff that goes into it. I think it's a completely fascinating and internet-y approach to doing sports and being safe while this pandemic happens. So I'm extremely excited to talk to Jason about that today, and also about his just general current situation while baseball is shut down and everyone's wondering what's going on in general. Now, of course, I'm talking to a sports broadcaster, and sports will come up, but I want to let you know as soon as I can that this is a podcast episode for everybody. It's not just going to be us talking about home runs and what you might call sports ball if you are disdainful of sports. It's really about a wider social thing, which is what we do anytime sports comes up on this podcast. And we're in particular doing that because baseball in the United States is kind of a weird canary in the coal mine for whatever's going on in the entire rest of society. And a thing you might not know about American history is that Americans have pretty much found a way to have some version of a professional baseball season every year since baseball had professional seasons. The earliest records of professional seasons are in the 1870s and 1880s. You may not know it goes back that far, but there you go. Most people consider the modern version of baseball to have started around 1900, and this year, if we do not have a Major League Baseball season, that will be the first year that has happened in spite of, you know, everything else that happened in the 20th century and the 21st. In particular, I want to point you in the footnotes to a CBS Sports article that covers the main stoppages of play and interruptions of play in baseball history. For one thing, there have been labor strikes in baseball history. By the way, I support that. The players should receive pay for being the greatest athletes on earth. But their longest labor strike that's ever happened in baseball only canceled a few games at the end of the 1994 season and the playoffs, and then a few games at the start of the 1995 season. Both years still had baseball, and there was never a total interruption of the game, even though that strike lasted 232 days. And as far as the rest of world events go, America just kind of finds a way to play. You might imagine, hey, World War II would have been a good time to stop. No, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt sent a letter to Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis, and it wasn't a letter between two guys with very long, interesting names. It was a letter that is known as the Greenlight Letter, because Roosevelt specifically encouraged Landis to keep the league going throughout World War II. Many players missed the seasons in order to serve in the military, but professional baseball did happen. There are also other weird situations where they just found a way to keep going. In 1989, the World Series was interrupted during its third game by the Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area. It was a series between the Giants of San Francisco and the A's of Oakland, so they both needed to play in the Bay Area. There was a massive earthquake, and the World Series was only delayed 10 days and completed in normal fashion otherwise. The September 11th attacks only delayed baseball 1 week, and the World Series was pushed slightly into November, even though one of the teams involved was the New York Yankees. There have also been occasional cancellations of games, such as a series planned to be played in Japan in 2003 because the United States was in the run-up to the second Iraq War, and they felt they shouldn't have baseball teams too far from the country in a war run-up situation. I don't totally understand it, but that was what they did, and they just played it somewhere else. And the historical event that's come up a lot in these times is the 1918 flu pandemic. You might be very surprised to learn that not even that canceled the baseball season, partly because we'll have some links about how historically in that time, the story of the flu pandemic was sort of suppressed or covered up or ignored in many ways. And so when the 1918 baseball season was shortened, it was officially because of World War I and not because of the disease. And the following year, 1919, baseball still played 140 games, even though, again, one of the biggest disease pandemics of all time happened. Jason and I are not doctors. We also do not run Major League Baseball, but we will talk about things we know from history and things we have seen in the news about where the season could be going. Obviously, I don't think it should happen if it's unsafe for anyone, but we'll explore how likely or not it is that baseball will return this year. And as a last bit of setup, I just want to tell you who two people are, because we will name check them without explaining them. It's very simple. One of them is Lucas Giolito. He is an excellent pitcher for the Chicago White Sox right now. He got a couple votes last year for the highest pitching award in all of baseball. He's a very good player, and he's doing some interesting Twitch streaming right now. The other name is Rudy Gobert, and he's someone to know because he is an NBA player. He plays basketball in the United States. He's originally from France. And he is someone who very publicly and very foolishly did not take the coronavirus seriously. At one press conference, he laughed about the danger of it and then proceeded to wipe his hands on his face and then all over all of the different microphones as like some kind of gag. Gobert proceeded to feel sick And then he tested positive for the coronavirus, and the test results came in immediately before an NBA game that he and a bunch of other guys were going to play in front of a crowd and everything. So they got the players out, sent the fans home abruptly. Since then, numerous other NBA players have contracted it, and the league shut down. And as Jason and I will discuss, that was a real signal to kind of the entire rest of the United States that this was a disease to take seriously. Gobert has since apologized, and I'm not talking about him to go after him or anything, but he's going to come up as a very, very interesting story and data point with the whole coronavirus situation, because a lot of people did not take the disease seriously, even when it became very clear that it was a serious thing. And the thing with Rudy Gobert is there were cameras on him because he's a sports figure. And so sports really gives us that lens, right? It lets us see a specific story we can latch onto that illuminates a bigger thing about society. And so that's why I'm talking to a baseball broadcaster today. That's all the setup you need. So let's get into looking at all of society with that lens. Please sit back or sit at home while you watch a Taiwanese baseball game, because that baseball game happening today does have players in it. It's just that everyone in the crowd is a robotic mannequin. So how about that? Either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Jason Benetti. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. I felt empowered to come talk to you because you are doing so many neat and fun things while there is unfortunately not a baseball season happening. I enjoyed, the latest White Sox game versus the Mariners. How do you handle a tough virtual defeat like that?
I struggled because I was rooting for the Sox and it's not a real game at all. But MLB The Show is so realistic that I can't help but get into it. Like, I feel like I'm at the ballpark, which I think makes me a little bit of a psychopath, but I also am enjoying it so much. Like, the first one we did was at Fenway Park, and I started telling stories about Fenway Park like I was at Fenway Park, and that's how much I miss baseball right now, I think. It's actually great fun, and technically it's pretty easy to do, and it just sharing anything right now is really fun.
I can tell as you guys go into these games, because you're doing them just on Thursdays, but then you have done all of the research on all of the previous week of simulated virtual games, and then are delivering that with kind of like, oh, we're having fun, obviously. And then in that game, the opposing team hits two home runs to get ahead, and you guys sounded legitimately sad. Like, it was not a put on anymore.
Well, and it's ridiculous, too, because we had this conversation earlier in the game about how Aaron Bummer and Alex Colomay had swapped closer roles. And then the bullpen gives up the game. And so we actually had like a storyline that we were following through the game, which is so bizarre to know that what we brought up earlier, it felt real. And again, we have all the information from the simulation from earlier in the week. And I've got baseball reference up. I've got notes on players. So I'm doing this like a real game. And you get lost. You just get lost in it. It feels real.
Yeah, that was one of my first questions is how much prep is going into one of these, because it seems like approximately equal to a regular baseball game.
Yeah, I had done my research on teams for the season pretty much all the way through, getting ready for the actual season before this all hit. So I've got my notes on players, and I'm using them now, and I'll use them again when the players are actually on the field. So it's not a lot of day of research. It's just reminding myself of some things about guys. And then there was one player who showed up in the Mariners lineup. We don't get the lineup until the game spits it out. So there was one player who showed up on the Mariners in the seventh spot. He was DHing, and he had popped his Achilles earlier in the offseason, and he wasn't going to play, so I didn't have anything on him. He showed up, and I was like, whoa, what is going on? And the breaks are only like 3 seconds, so it's not like you can rush. Like, if something bizarre happens in a baseball game and we go to break, I have 90 seconds to do a little cursory research. I have 3 seconds on MLB The Show. So I was like, okay, who is this guy? Chuck was talking. I was Googling his name. And then Chuck, just for fun, was like, hey, what you got on this guy? I was like, okay, Jack. All right.
And it seems very uncanny, like, watching these videos, because I actually haven't played that video game before, but the graphics are incredibly realistic, except when they show the White Sox manager and like a few other specific things. And so, and also like the action is sped up, but it's also sort of the real pace. Like it's very uncanny all the time.
Yeah, I think what it is through the Players Association, the players all have licensing agreements, so they all get to have their real likenesses. And I don't think the coaches are included in that. So the coaches all look like wax figures that you'd find at some like janky, low-rent Wisconsin Dells museum sort of situation. And contrasted with what you get from the players and how realistic, and like Jose Abreu in our first game took a swing and sort of backpedals into the left-handed batter's box. And I was like, wow, that is absolutely something Jose does. And then you look in the dugout and there's this wax figurine of somebody who's definitely not Ricky Renteria. And it's a laugh a minute. Like we can't decide whether or not we have a fourth wall. Like, we can't decide whether or not it's, like, theater where the audience knows that you're in it and they're in the show as well, or, like, is it real? And I think bouncing back and forth is quite hysterical for us and probably thoroughly confusing for the audience, but we're laughing, so that's what matters.
Yeah, it's sincere and fun, and we're all in on it, and it's great. And I was curious, what was the spark for you and Chuck Garfine, who's your colleague with the broadcast, and so many other people, like, putting this together? Like, why did you start doing these broadcasts?
Yeah, it was definitely not my idea, I have to say. It was the idea of NBC Sports Chicago. They and NBC Sports globally had pitched it to a couple of the different markets to see if it would be worthy to do and if it would be fun. And when they came to me with it, Chuck was already on board. And I basically said, yeah, I think it'd be really interesting. And then we did the first one, and it was like the best hour of my week that week. And I thought, oh, I didn't know that I needed this so much. Like, we, you know, you do 162 baseball games and you do it for years and years and years and years. Sometimes you take things for granted. And then you sit down when there's no baseball and you do a video game and your heart feels full. And you wonder whether or not that's a symbol of your joy for the game plus a little bit of pathology.
Because also, occasionally you guys talk about missing foods. Like, it's like, this is great, and I really want a bratwurst, which is amazing.
Yeah, I literally just want to smell grilled onions. Like, if I have an air vent directly behind where I've been shooting videos and everything, if they could just pipe in funnel cake into my air vent, I would really feel like I was at the ballpark. If my bedroom, home office, or one of my rooms in my home could just like smell like grilled onions without me having to do the cooking, but smell like ballpark, I'd be totally in and probably be fine for months.
You just need a very special set of candles. You know what I mean? Like, you're set.
Honestly, I think that's actually a really good business idea, is ballpark candles. And the aroma could smell like your own home ballpark. I think fans would flock to it. I absolutely think it would sell. So maybe you should get on that.
Yeah, I should patent a Cincinnati chili thingy candle right now.
What did Alex get you for your birthday? Did he get you a card or like a gift card or something like that? No, he got me a Skyline chili candle. Oh, God.
So also, I've been following the last day or two because basically the baseball season is not happening. And I feel like more and more people are finding ways to recreate it. Like, there's the Thursday games you guys are doing. And then baseballreference.com, which is a site that every baseball fan knows, but I think maybe casual non-fans of baseball don't. They're using a computer game called Out of the Park 21 to simulate the season. And then it turns out actual Major League Baseball organized players to play an MLB The Show mini-season. And according to your Twitter, you have gotten into a small scrape with that. I want to talk about that?
I do. So, according to my Twitter, it was a very serious message that I was clearly joking about, but some people did not find it to be joking. Evidently, my laugh at the end wasn't enough of a sell job. So the other night, you know, I'm sitting at home like we all are, and I saw on Lucas Giolito, the White Sox pitcher, on his Twitter account that he was playing his MLB The Show games that night. And so I hopped into the Twitch stream for gamers, and I had created a Twitch account a week before for this trivia night that some friends and I were playing via Twitch and Zoom, etc. And so I go into Twitch, Lucas is playing, and I typed in a couple of things like, hey, leave the announcing to the rest of us, or like, leave it to the pros, or something like that, or you're bad at announcing or something. And it's from Jason Benetti 44, but I don't have like a blue check mark on Twitch because I never use it. And so one of the moderators deleted my inflammatory posts about Lucas's announcing. And then somebody else called me a stupid troll kid, which actually is not terribly far from the truth. So I went on Twitter and I made a video apologizing to Lucas for it. And Gio thought it was funny and all of this. But I actually had two of the moderators tweet at me saying, oh, we're really sorry. And I was like, no, it's hilarious. I mean, I don't care. I think it's really funny. But it was quite entertaining. I watched Lucas play for a while. One of the other Sox players texted me to ask if it was really me in the chat room. And it was.
When I like everybody's doing each other's roles, like it's a video game usually played by fans actually being played by a player. And then the player is being an announcer, and then an announcer is being a fan, giving him grief. It was great. Love it.
There's a chance that in the future, because of my trolling and lurking in the Twitch chat room, there's a chance that I may hop on another stream and actually do play-by-play of Lucas's game. We're thinking about maybe working that out.
Thank you for an exclusive. Got a scoop?
It's not exclusive yet, but it will... at some point possibly be an exclusive.
As the announcer for the White Sox, I don't know exactly if you're employed by the team or the league or the network or how it works, but with the season being shut down, I've read a few things about the players getting like an advance on salaries and also they're not playing at the same time. I don't know if it's prying to ask, but like what happens to the broadcasters for teams when the season's not happening?
Yeah, I'm a team employee and all major league clubs have agreed to pay their employees through April. So honestly, I hate even talking about it because so many people are in so many worse places. I'm in a fortunate spot, and a lot of us announcers are in this fortunate spot where we get to sit at home and try to make people smile, but we get to sit at home. And there are like 60 million Americans in the service industry who don't get to sit at home, and I hate that.
Podcasting, very similar. But yeah, that's interesting to know. There's some talk of, you know, maybe the season restarts at some point. There was a rumor that Bob Nightingale reported in USA Today that maybe they play the season at the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League facilities for spring training. Does that seem like a feasible thing that would happen or a thing that would be functional?
My global thought on that first is I think it would be delinquent for Major League Baseball not to have plans that they're talking about. Like my concern would be if they said we don't have any plans. People can criticize line by line, and obviously that's everybody's prerogative, and that's why we have media. So, like, criticize away. It's my feeling that I'd rather have them have more plans and have a lot of them not seem feasible, but also have a bunch of plans to work through, global ideas of how we can get sports back up and running, because at some point, we do have to have a society as well. And then specifically about those plans, Jeff Passan from ESPN, one of my colleagues who's just awesome at all of this, he's been navigating this whole thing beautifully with his reporting. He has said that he believes it will be Arizona or bust, that Florida wouldn't be included just because of logistics of doing two bubbles and then changing the division alignments and all that stuff too. So Arizona or bust is what Jeff said most recently. I think there are other plans in play, too. I actually applaud Major League Baseball for trying to figure out a way to safely do it. And with Jeff's original report, one of the keys to that was abundant testing for not only Major League Baseball, but for communities. So we can test people, pull them out, contact tracing and all that Dr. Fauci's talking about as well. I applaud baseball for giving it a run because at some point you have to try to live your lives in as safe a manner as possible, but you do have to live too.
Yeah, it makes total sense, yeah. It seems like baseball is an interesting microcosm for the whole thing, because obviously the more critical structural parts of society are more important, but it's a thing that has happened every year for over a century, and as far as I can tell from research, has never completely not happened for a season. And so it's almost strange to think about it not happening, even though it would make total sense for it to not happen this year.
Yeah, I think there's sort of a doom feeling that comes with something that's always there. Like, it makes this feel even more outlier-ish for our lives. And so I think baseball would be a nice sense of, as people say, normalcy. But I also think, let's be honest, Rudy Gobert in the NBA shut down our country. Like, that happened, and everybody had to act because the NBA just flat out squealed the brakes and shut down. So sports was at the vanguard of all of this, and quite often sports is at the vanguard of everything opening back up. Whether we should place that importance on sports, I don't know, and it's for everybody individually to decide. But the fact that sports takes such a lead role typically, I think it would be a signal to people of light starting to stream in again.
Because also I read recently that the baseball league in Taiwan started back up this past weekend from when we're taping. It was April 12th. They started playing games again. There's no people in the stands, but they arranged a game and they played. It seems like they have super specific testing and plans in order to do that, and obviously you don't run the whole league or something, but I'm curious if that could impact Major League Baseball's thinking at all.
I think it has to, right? I mean, we're all groping around for information here. Like, the data is just not robust enough, and we don't seem to have a large-scale interest from some people in creating that testing capacity. Now, other private interests are doing that, which is wonderful. But I think the thing that Taiwan, number one, they have mannequins in the stands, which I think is hilarious. And then number two, you have to think it's important because I know there are some people who are going to think that our lives are going to change forever in so many different ways. And like, anything that we assumed would be there a month ago won't be there in the future or could not be there in the future or whatever. Sports is coming back. Like, if Taiwan can play baseball right now and soccer leagues across the world are talking about how to start up in a bubble, like, this will burn out and science will catch up. It's just time that has to elapse. And so I think it's a good signal of another ray of sunshine that, yes, like, we are not going to be living in this forever either.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And also for any listeners who do not believe that there are mannequins in the stands, you can look it up. The league is called the Chinese Professional Baseball League in Taiwan, and the Rakuten Monkeys of that league have mannequins that apparently have some sort of robotic function sitting in the stands instead of people, which is very MLB The Show, if anything. You know, it's a good time.
And very soon they'll have the ability to tweet angry thoughts at announcers.
There are many more things you're doing with this time that we can talk about. Like, you're doing a wonderful thing on Twitter where you are having people send you messages and then you can share them with the person they would want it shared to. And I think it's because, especially baseball announcers, I think people develop such a relationship with them over the course of 162 games, hopefully playoffs too, every year.
It was honestly the first couple weeks of this, I stayed home because I had been exposed in a couple places to COVID-19 and I tested negative. There were a couple of basketball arenas where people had it. And I didn't do much the first 10 days or so because I was just trying to wrap my mind around it and deal with the anxiety of the abnormal situation and all this. And then I realized I didn't really have fun in me at that point, but the thing that was breaking my heart so much was people having funerals where, like, you couldn't have a funeral, or people were dying alone in hospitals. And I just, to have to die in relative anonymity during a pandemic while you can't have your family with you is the ultimate in sullen life. And I just wanted to somehow, some way, try to help a little bit, make sure everybody knew that there was a human connection still available and out there. People have sent me such beautiful things, and some people have sent me such hilarious things, taunting their friends. The very deep messages that I've gotten, I had somebody send me a poem that they had written back in their college days for their father, and I've had messages to people who are sick, and honestly, like, the level of honesty people have shared is overwhelming in some ways. The thing that's hard is I have not had anybody in my family contract COVID-19, and friends of mine have not as yet either. However, somebody who sent me a message, and I cut the message within the last 3 weeks, somebody who asked me to read a message to their family member, that family member died a couple days ago. And it's like there's this level of punch that it hits you with to know that you had made somebody's day in some small way, and then that person went away. And it's just hard to fathom that that's happening across the world right now.
I'm so glad you're okay, and I'm so sorry for them. It seems like an event like this, did it make it clearer to you that you had this opportunity to, like, sort of help people connect with each other? Or was that always just something that's been on your mind as you've especially gotten to become the, you know, the announcer for your childhood favorite baseball team?
I think it actually hit me, the level of human connection that comes with sports, early, but it definitely washed over me 2 years ago. Let me say this as a backdrop. There were times when I was in the minors that I felt like I should be doing something more, quote unquote, important with my life, that there were people to fight for and causes to fight for. And then you realize that in some ways, bringing a smile to people's faces is terribly important. And then 2 years ago, we had the situation where Danny Farquhar, the pitcher for the White Sox, had that aneurysm in his brain that exploded or whatever it did. And then he had the bleeding and he had to go into emergency surgery. And the next day at the ballpark was one of the most surreal days I've had, because there was so much discussion around the batting cage of mortality and of these athletes who are these perfect specimens dealing with the thought that they could just be done right now. And that day that Danny Farquhar came back and threw out the first pitch later on that season was one of the most emotional moments I've ever had at a ballpark. And to see how important sports was to him, his family, teammates, the bond that it creates, to know how much it touches people's hearts, that's kind of when it cemented for me.
People who are not baseball fans may not know, there was a player on the White Sox, Danny Farquhar, who had a brain aneurysm, I believe, in the dugout, and then had to be rushed out of the stadium, and they managed to save his life, and he's still around today. But people see sports as mostly silly, and then it's also a real thing happening in real life, and you get those moments, I guess. Yeah.
Think about the one place in America where, if you're a blue side or a red side person, you could be sitting next to one another. I guess like pop music concerts are another place where you could have this, but sports is really the place where you could be sitting next to somebody who ideologically is an absolute 180 from you, and you high five and you pass money back and forth to pay for a hot dog, and nobody asks that question, and you can actually enjoy it together. And so sports is absolutely a very silly thing, but it also, because it crosses ideological lines, it happens to be the place where if it shuts down, the country shuts down, as it happened with the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, 110 million tickets were sold for major and minor league baseball. Like, some of those are multiple times to the same person, but that's a lot of hours spent by a lot of people doing that very specific thing. I feel like I wish I could see like a graph or a chart or a write-up of like how people are spending that time instead.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a shock to the system to see how people are spending that time. But I also think that when sports comes back, like, there were all these stories about Major League Baseball attendance declining, and that's been the case. You can find stories every decade, basically, in the history of the game about attendance issues in certain places. I can't wait till the first day that the vaccine, like, the all clear is out there, whether it's a therapeutic that has allowed us to mitigate the risk of this disease or whatever it is. That first game where people get to go be together is going to be standing room only in every stadium that you could possibly imagine. And I just think people are going to enjoy being outside more and appreciate that more. And I think one of the long-term positives, and it's so hard to pick those out in the sea of negatives, I don't mean to paint a faulty, rosy outlook, but there will be a day we're all outside again, and it's going to be like Carnival.
I know it's a much different significance and seriousness, but you and I both went to Syracuse University, and like, first day of spring at that very, very cold campus, suddenly every single person is out on the quad in shorts, even if it's like only 45 or so. It's amazing.
It's honestly, Alex, I said the very same thing to a friend of mine like a week ago. You know, like you just said, there's that day where yeah. You look outside and you're like, oh my gosh, people go to this school.
Right.
And they have shorts.
We're not all a shuffling parka moving from one building to the other building. We're a person.
Right. Yeah, with our heads ducked to avoid the wind. Like, that, it's amazing.
In terms of your day-to-day, I'd imagine the virtual game commentating is adding something to it. But also, for a lot of people, if they are able to work from home, I feel like they're missing the regularity of a commute or the regularity of going to specific jobs, specific places. Do you miss the 81 games on the road in this situation?
Yeah, and then in the off season too, you know, doing games for ESPN, I'm used to being gone. I literally have not been home for this amount of time consecutively, I would say since 2005. The year I got the Sox job was 2016. That summer before, I took time off from minor league baseball and was just doing ESPN work, but I still wasn't home for a month straight ever. I've not been in the same city for this long since I graduated from college. I actually somehow miss like seeing a TSA agent, which is so odd. Like, it's not like I miss it, but there's a rhythm to it. There's a rhythm to like wake up at 6, get in the cab, go to the airport, connect here, and then go do a game. And I guess I didn't realize exactly how much of my social life I get from work as well, because we're always around people. There's always an analyst or a sideline reporter, producer, director, camera person, whatever. And I've heard from a lot of them during this, but it's also odd just to not be around that group of people who we create stuff with on a daily basis.
What is the day-to-day of a baseball announcer like during the season? Because we hear from you guys, you know, for 2 or 3 hours a day, but then there's, I know, all kinds of travel in between, and I'm curious what else.
Yeah, what we're doing right now is such the opposite of that. It's basically wake up, do some notes for the game, grab lunch however you grab lunch, whether it's at home or at a restaurant or something, finish up your notes, do life stuff, and then I usually go to the ballpark about 2:30. So I'll get to the ballpark, go fill out the lineup, go down to the clubhouse, talk to some guys, go out for batting practice, hang out, talk to people, grab a bite to eat, go back into the booth, do some more notes, talk to people in the press box, do the game, get home by 11. But basically, we're there from 2:30 to 11 or so, and then go do it again. So right about now would be the time in a season, as we're taping this, where like the luster of the first 2 weeks would kind of wear off, and you'd start to say, I'm tired. People would start coming up to you saying, you don't look great. You look like you're a little tired. Or like you'd start to have a short fuse with people because there's invariably an extra inning game and a rain delay and all this stuff. And I would give anything to have somebody say, it looks like I don't have enough sleep. Because boy, I'm like a gold medalist sleeper right now.
Too good at it.
Oh, I'm amazing at sleeping.
I suppose I could ask you, when do you think the season comes back, if at all? But also, what do you think the general future of baseball is with this interruption and maybe further interruption from there?
We're going to come back and play. It's really, anybody who tells you that they have a plan and they really believe in their plan is great, but it's all up to science. It's all up to how this virus travels. It's how municipalities handle it. And it's how there is or is not a federal response. Part of it is simply just how does the virus travel? How does that happen? And what sort of therapeutics? Like, everybody's looking at the vaccine, and I get that. But Scott Gottlieb, who's become a bipartisan person that we turn to on Twitter and otherwise, has talked about the value of therapeutics. And if we can treat this disease, and maybe we can somehow minimize the amount of people getting very ill because of it, that combined with testing is going to be the thing that starts baseball back up. I wish everybody had a foam finger that, like, we're number one science rather than an individual team right now.
Yeah, I always think of that thing in The Simpsons where Homer will occasionally be on the couch with a tiny pennant rooting for something like the XFL or like mid-season replacement sitcoms. You know, I really want a science one right now.
It's a funny way to think about it. That's where all of our efforts should really be going, is to understanding the science behind it, because Major League Baseball, without robust data and understanding of how we're going to get out of this, they're not going to start up until that happens, I don't think.
Yeah, that seems right. This episode will come out on this coming Monday, so people can catch you the following Thursday at the White Sox versus Angels virtual game. Is there anywhere else people should look you up?
On Twitter, at Jason Benetti, I'm forcing my sportscaster friends to do acting with me of famous scenes from movies and assorted other random garbage.
Meant to say, that's been very fun. This has really brought out creativity. I'm into it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's good fun. We're getting a smile out of it, and that's all that matters at this point. Because honestly, I'm not a doctor. I can't help in that way. I can donate to charities. But my job is to make people, have people, allow people to smile right now and create human interaction when we don't have anything.
folks, that is the episode for this week. My thanks to Jason Benetti for everything he has put his creativity and empathy and time toward as we all just try to figure out, how to take care of each other in this situation. I hope you'll check out his baseball broadcasts and more. And in our food notes, you will find links to the Chicago White Sox broadcast that Jason Benetti and Chuck Garfine are doing every Thursday. You'll also find the sources that we drew on for the historical stuff in the intro and also for a lot of the statistics today, such as 110 million baseball tickets being sold last year. Again, some of those are, one person getting multiple tickets. It's still a huge amount of activity that is now just going toward doing puzzles or something. I don't know what. Also, one just whole separate interesting thing to leave you with is coming from a piece in The Economist where they have a glossary of new words that have come about in these coronavirus times. And you know me, I love a long German word, or at least a silly German word. I'm German-American, I'm allowed to, but so are you, because they're just fun. And the word we've got for you is Geistesspiel. Or possibly Geistesspiel. My pronunciation is not perfect. But Geistesspiel is the German word for ghost game. And there was a point right before things were shut down in Germany for the pandemic where there was a soccer game that was going to happen, but the town did not allow a crowd to be there. And so the players played in a completely empty stadium, other than, I guess, staff or something. And this game between FC Köln and Mönchengladbach, the rivalry of the Rhineland, was considered a Geistesspiel because, it's all the players playing. But as the Economist article describes, it was something that apparently to the people involved felt like sports bereft of its soul, which is kind of a staggering thing to think about. But as we go forward into seeing what the rest of this year is like and how we can best take care of each other, we may be relying on people like Jason Benetti to make the fun that we were able to have in a different way before still something fun and still something with a lot of soul to it. And so I thank him for being on the show and for everything he's doing. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by me in Durham, North Carolina. Then it was edited by Chris Souza in a whole separate spot. If you love this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A space where Jason Benetti is not only broadcasting virtual White Sox games and recording messages for people to give to their loved ones, he's also doing this thing where he and other sportscasters perform bits from movies and do a little video of it on Twitter, and it is just for fun, and it's just great. You can find that at Jason Benetti's Twitter account. He is at Jason Benetti, so that's easy. His last name is spelled Benetti. My own Twitter account is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitztagram. And I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.